everyone, and welcome into crushthestreet.com. I got a brand new guest on the line with me today. We're going to be talking about crypto, cybersecurity, really the passion for development in this space. I mean, Bitcoin is moving back up closer to $8,000 here as we do this interview. I mean, people have been watching it kind of trend down, and then we have these sudden spikes upwards, which kind of reignites the community. It seems like even for me as a human dealing with the emotions of the ups and downs of the space, I even felt that, even though I'm just holding long-term, I believe in it long-term. And we got smart people like Hartej Sawhney, who's developing the space. They are putting their efforts, their talents, and their collaborations into building out the future of cryptocurrency and cybersecurity. And he's a super charismatic guy, founder of Zokio. And he's in fintech, cybersecurity, strong knowledge of Bitcoin, blockchain, digital currencies, and related technologies. I mean, he started one of the first Bitcoin meetups in Las Vegas. He even met his wife at a Bitcoin meetup. He's all in. So I look forward to speaking with him today. Thanks for coming on the show with me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Happy to be on Crush the Street.
Yeah, well, hey, let's start off a little bit with how you got into the space and what led you to cybersecurity, fintech, cryptocurrency, and, you know, why we're having this conversation right now.
Yeah, I mean, to give you some background, I got into the startup world about a little over a decade ago. I entered a startup accelerator in Chile. The Chilean government gave me a $40,000 grant to start my first startup, and that startup was focused on payments, and we were revolutionizing the point of sale industry. We were actually really focused on high volume restaurants, and we were re-engineering the world's most commonly found point of sale system in order to enable mobile payments and mobile ordering. And I became obsessed with financial technology and the intersection of finance, technology, payments, data. And after that, my co-founder, who Gal Dolber, actually from Argentina, him and I moved to Dallas, Texas. We went to this other accelerator called Tech Wildcatters. And after that, we decided to call Las Vegas our home. And in Las Vegas, while we were building and scaling this startup, we got a bunch of restaurants and major properties in Vegas, major restaurants to start using our mobile point of sale system. Bitcoin was introduced to me by a bunch of mutual friends that had starting a small mining operation in Vegas. And I went down a massive rabbit hole of reading the Satoshi white paper, followed by a lot of videos by Max Kaiser and a lot of videos by Andreas Antonopoulos. There weren't nearly as many videos as there is today on YouTube. There was a lot more reading at the time, a lot more essays, a lot more Nick Szabo essays were definitely a big helpful infrastructure for the core of this industry. There wasn't a book like The Business of the Blockchain by William Mogire that I could just hand to someone to get a good synopsis of what is blockchain, where did it start, and where is it going? Which on that side note, I would highly recommend William Mogire's The Business of the Blockchain. It's the one book that I hand to anybody I hire or anybody that's going to be on the business side who's non-technical, especially working in the crypto industry. I think William does a great job of providing a good synopsis, especially for people who are non-technical, because, you know, like Andreas's Bitcoin book, you can only get through a couple of pages as someone who's non-technical before you're like, and Bitcoin's not for me. but I think William, you go through the first few pages and you're like, holy moly.
That's awesome. I haven't heard of the book. I look forward to reading it. I appreciate that that recommendation there. Okay, so tell us a little bit about the cybersecurity, the passion that led you down the cybersecurity world. I mean, I really feel like this is a can of worms. You know, I even think about like governments. You know, this is almost like, you know, when I think of like deep secrets that governments have and capabilities that they have, I mean, that's where I feel like they are holding back. You know what I mean? You hear about the planes, the boats, the missiles, and all the different things that they might be doing, the stealth bombers. But I feel like that's kind of where a lot of the secrets might lie, the ability for them to tap into things, cyber, you know, hack and whatnot that people don't know about. So just give us a little bit of, I said a lot there, so I'll let you
know. No, it's cool. Look, from our perspective, we run a team of white hat hackers, also known as ethical hackers. I often make a joke that for me, they're not white hats, they're white turbans, even though I'm not wearing a white turban. And basically it's that we think like black hats and protect our clientele. And anytime a network, a mobile application, or a website is released, somebody needs to be thinking like the black hat and thinking about all of the attack vectors that could be possible. And building out the right infrastructure is so important from a cybersecurity perspective when launching any piece of software. And so in the crypto industry, we've just seen it's such a brand new industry. It lacks regulation. It lacks clarity on government regulation. It lacks any regulatory private entity like PCI compliance or HIPAA. I've been running a small consultancy that has his team of white hat hackers. A few years ago, when Ethereum came out, we saw that these ICOs have smart contracts, and that these smart contracts, at the end of the day, are code, and that this code also needs to be audited, and that these companies that are releasing websites and mobile apps, they need to get those apps and websites and networks regularly pen tested. And a limited number of companies in the world wanted to or have the incentive even today to focus on this unique intersection of cybersecurity and cryptocurrency. And at that time, we had engineers that could, with their naked eye, look at an ICO smart contract and find critical vulnerabilities. And so there was a need for someone to use a balance of automated and manual tooling to go through this code and find vulnerabilities. And even today, you know, we're spending significantly more time in the crypto space talking to people at crypto exchanges about how they should value security and get regular penetration testing and write out cybersecurity infrastructure. And what would happen if you actually had a breach? Do you have someone on call for instant response? It's really common that when a security breach actually happens and you call an instant response company, you're going to be sitting on multiple days of legal paperwork before you can even deal with the breach. I think that we're going to have a growing amount of breaches in the space, but I look at breaches kind of like a kid burning his hand on the stove. When a kid burns his hand on the stove, he or she is not going to burn it again. And we need more people to burn their hand on the stove. We need more people to behave foolishly. But we're hitting a point where, how long is this going to continue? How long are we going to, in the crypto space, not value security? And it's not completely the user's fault either, because we have yet to develop a lot of mainstream user interface friendly applications that someone who's tech savvy could actually use securely. It's not really that easy to even securely store your own crypto today for someone who's not tech savvy. And so we have some ways to go. And there's multiple layers of security to be thinking about in this space. There's your personal security, there's your physical security, and then there's the security of the actual software and the technology, you know, and there's multiple layers of it, the protocol level security, the exchange side security. And we have people developing applications off of protocol layers that have security flaws in the protocol layer. So there's multiple layers of security flaws and problems that we have to work through in the crypto space. It's extremely immature still, and we're gonna need more smart people to keep working on this space.
Harthed, could you give me a little bit of an idea of, you know, or maybe share with our audience, you know, the importance of protecting your identity, protecting your personal information? And I was reminded of this yesterday. I was speaking with a property manager for a condo I own. And, you know, they have the big mailboxes where everyone's mailboxes are all together. And they're telling me that people are breaking into the mailboxes just to grab a few pieces of mail to take people's information. I'm like, how truly valuable is that? to just grab somebody's name and some information about them. And you know, what can really happen if someone takes some of your personal information? What can they do with it?
Steal your identity. The scariest thing they could do is steal your identity. And stealing someone's identity is a lot more scary than stealing someone's credit card. At least I can call Visa or MasterCard and say, cancel my credit card. I did not do the following transactions. If you steal someone's identity, things can take months, if not years, to recover from something like that. People could be taking out loans in your name and doing very large scale things of fraud under your name. But my personal concern with identity theft comes much more to, first and foremost, like in anything in cybersecurity, it's physical security. Like, are you and your family in danger because someone has now stolen your identity? There's a lot that someone can do by stealing your name, your birth date, things you want to avoid, like basic no-nos. Don't release your birthday publicly on the internet. Be careful about your first name and last name everywhere. Your social security numbers. Are you shredding your mail? Are you using the same password everywhere? Do you have basic two-factor authentication set up? People in crypto need to go through some basic cybersecurity showers of, do you have two-factor authentication set up? Do you have a hardware key, like a YubiKey? And if you don't know what I'm saying, and what I'm saying sounds like Chinese to you, just start Googling these things. Set up your two-factor authentication, 2FA. Look up YubiKey, YUBI. Meeting people in crypto who haven't set up some of this basic infrastructure, I find scary. Use a service like Dashlane to help protect your passwords. I'm not even sponsored by Dashlane, by the way. I just use it. Use a VPN on your mobile device. Put a little cover to cover your camera on your mobile device and your laptop. A lot of this stuff, to be honest, is just not discussed enough in crypto. It's more like, what's the price of Bitcoin? And when are we going to hit the moon? And like, what's the latest protocol that I could invest in at the same stage as Ethereum, where it was a dollar and now I have my first $1 million?
So tell us a little bit. You said something simple, but I think it's profound. I mean, the covering the cameras on your phone and, you know, the cameras we're using right now, I mean, is the risk is that somebody is using that camera and watching us. But how are they doing that? How is that possible?
It could be possible from something as small as a phishing attack, right? And so reality is most cryptocurrency exchanges have actually been attacked through a very simple phishing attack, where it's a phishing attack could be something as simple as a spear phishing attack where you click on the wrong email's PDF. You know, a really common attack nowadays is, this is as recent as this month. It's been happening quite a bit in the hospital space and in healthcare. Been happening in crypto exchanges is they email one of the newer employees an email where the subject of the email is one of the previous passwords that you've had. So they were able to figure out one of your older passwords. And so you recognize this password, and that password is the name of the PDF and the subject of the email. And the hit rate of people clicking this, the click rate has been significantly high. And as soon as you click that PDF, essentially, the hacker has gained access to being able to see your entire screen and mirror it. And from that point, the hacker can now gain access and slowly watch you enter passwords into your email, which is a really great key of access to everything else that you have access to. So they'll probably go for your email first. And then if you work for a company, they can work their way into the company systems and the company's databases. Hmm. And it brings me back to, do companies have an in-house chief information security officer? Do they have anybody that they've employed in-house to think about their security? And have they developed a basic cybersecurity program, a plan, like a training program that happens for all new employees and something regularly, even every few months, where it's like, hey guys, we're gonna have a quick 30-minute cybersecurity mashup with the entire company. Here are some common phishing things that are being happening. Don't click every email that you get. Don't click every PDF that you don't recognize. Like, a lot of fundamental cybersecurity training could save companies a lot of time and effort and money. And it's also social engineering, physical social engineering training in companies is important. Like, was someone able to just walk in the office and go, I'm here to see Bill, no worries. And he just walks in the office and sits on someone's desktop, plugs in a USB stick and starts doing stuff. In crypto, this stuff is easier to start to think about, in my opinion, because it's low-hanging fruit in this industry. Hackers are going after crypto exchanges. They're going after people that they hear have Bitcoin. It's not smart to travel around the world with Bitcoin stickers all over your backpack and rolling suitcase. Be careful. You might get kidnapped in Thailand with 12-year-old boys poking knives at you tied to a hostile chair.
I remember being at a Bitcoin conference and them people saying, you know, you are in a room essentially surrounded by, you know, white hackers, you know, or I forget the exact word you use.
White hat hackers.
White hackers. Turbans. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For me. And then so white hackers. I don't know why I said that. But but yeah, so this environment, I mean, there's a ton of smart people, a lot of people thinking like criminals, but for the good of the environment, the ecosystem. And I think it's a good place to start.
Not enough.
It's an interesting road you've gone down. Tell us a little bit about your company, Zokio, and kind of how you've integrated your passions for the crypto space using this this platform.
Yeah, so the way we see it is two things need to happen in the cryptocurrency ecosystem to grow: quality software development and value of security, cybersecurity. And when really good software is developed, security is going to be thought about along each and every step of the product cycle. And from what we're seeing, so many quality technology companies coming out of Silicon Valley and New York are consecutively hitting the exact same road bumps. So they raise even companies coming out of elite accelerators like Y Combinator. You come out of Y Combinator, you raise your first $1 million or $2, you hire a couple of engineers, you likely, at least hopefully, you already have a CTO. If not, you're already probably doomed. You need to have a co-founder who's a CTO, in my opinion, for a quality startup, in-house CTO. Startups that outsource tech fail. Thank you, Ben Horowitz. And, you know, you raise your first few million dollars, you hire your first few engineers, and you hit a block that you can no longer afford to hire more American engineers in San Francisco and New York City. And we're working with our engineers are based out of the Ukraine and in Bangalore, India. And in Bangalore, we have a team of ethical hackers. And in Ukraine, we have a large team of full stack engineers. And we try to work in a way where we augment very unique projects, long-term engineering efforts. So usually we're extending an engineering team by 2 to 3 engineers, one QA person and one project manager dedicated to that project. And at the same time, we're leveraging a team of hackers to make sure that this project on an ongoing basis will be secure. So some of our business is more of a cybersecurity services business where we're just steadily doing pen testing, VAPT testing. We're still doing smart contract auditing. And the other side is traditional software development, but only with a limited number of companies that we can partner with for the long term. Where one of the examples is we love Haskell and we love functional programming. And functional programming is something that we believe is the future of programming, and it's a big part of the future of the cryptocurrency ecosystem. And so it's been great to work with other companies that we can help support and grow their engineering teams that need these unique types of engineers that are truly full stack and can handle languages like Haskell and Scala and Clojure. These are unique things that, I mean, if you want to build a team of Clojure engineers or Haskell guys or people who are coding in Rust in New York City and San Francisco and London, these are extremely expensive human beings that are tough to recruit full time to work for you and wear your company's hoodie and logo. And so we're trying to bridge this gap where we're leveraging and maintaining high quality talent, but they work for us. They don't really want to work for you full time. And we will develop a long-term relationship, because for us, it's about, can you build quality software where security is actually valued on each step of the product cycle? Because for a long time, we've been a white hat hacking shop that we audit code after it's written, or we're pen testing code, pen testing a website after it's made. And it's nice to kind of sit in the beginning part of a software development cycle to make sure that things are written properly. And the word Zokio itself literally means to augment in Japanese. And so we're pretty much splitting our team between Las Vegas, London, Kiev, Ukraine, and Bangalore. And so like London and Vegas are more business and sales hubs, and the builders are in Kiev and Bangalore, India.
Well, I mean, I think it's very clear that you're not just some fly-by-night, you know, someone who got into the space because of the speculation that happened in 2017 in the crypto space. I mean, you are someone who's deeply passionate about this and has largely been unwavered by the fluctuation in the Bitcoin price, which is, I think it's very telling as to what is happening in the space. I mean, there's people that are diving in and that believe wholeheartedly for the future. So, but having said that, I have to ask the question. I mean, you got into the space. I mean, Bitcoin excited you. You listened to Max Keiser in the early days. You're at Andreas Antonopoulos. I mean, what are your general thoughts on the Bitcoin price? You know, here we are, you know, with a quick move, close to $8,000. I mean, we're down from 20, up from 3,000. You know, what are some of your general thoughts, especially with the halving coming up here in 2020? Talk to us a little bit.
You know, Crypto Omar put a tweet out today where he said that we had 2 years of bull markets and now we're going to have, and then we had 2 years of correction and now he predicts 2 years of bull markets. And I tend to agree with Omar on this one. I think that we're going to see the same cycle come back. I think exciting times are coming back. I don't think that it's going to be as ridiculous as it shouldn't be as 2017 and 18. And that's because the ridiculousness came with people that were scammers, that did not want to value cybersecurity because they're scammers. They had more of an approach of, does this make money? Okay, cool. Pump, dump. This space is not meant for that. This is an exciting time where I'm excited about scalability. I'm excited about security, and I'm excited about privacy. Because privacy is such a heavy human discussion that is directly impacting geopolitics right now. It is directly impacting the rise of nationalization globally. And it's directly has to do with the rise of the war on cash and how we're increasingly entering a surveillance state. And so I will say for Bitcoin, not every transaction should be occurring on a public ledger. We're going to need multiple blockchains that solve different unique problems. In terms of price, I don't really love talking about Bitcoin price, but just to entertain you, I will say long term, with the halving coming up and with adoption and with quality engineers building on Bitcoin, and I don't think $10,000 is going to be, it's considered high very soon. I think that we're going to be entering the next phase where the new bottom will be 20 or 25,000, and then the next bottom will be 50. And I think it will just keep going up. There's mathematical scarcity built into Bitcoin. And so at least for Bitcoin, that's where I see this is going. And overall for the whole crypto ecosystem, I can't help but be extremely optimistic. And most of the optimism is around the new proof of stake blockchains. There's a lot of excitement around zero knowledge proof. And if I were to mention a couple of privacy coins that I'm excited about, I've been looking at dApps. I'm really excited about dApps. I think that they did a really good job of taking the Ring confidential transactions, which is the best part about Monero, and they put that into a brand new blockchain protocol that is focused on privacy. And it's into one blockchain that uses proof of stake. So excited about the future of dApps, still excited about Monero, still very excited about Bitcoin. Ethereum has a lot of extremely smart human beings working behind it, but it has scalability issues because of a lot of things. And they've been working hard with Casper and some recent forks to solve scalability as they go from proof of work to proof of stake. And then some of the newer projects that are proof of stake that I'm looking at, and I actually advise, is Casper Labs, which is technically a fork of our chain, also proof of stake. And I'm excited about RSK, smart contracts on Bitcoin, you know, over 45% of Bitcoin's hashing power. Pretty interesting to put the use of secure smart contracts, RSK.
Well, such a pleasure, Harthaj, that you came on the show with us today. You know, really, I can feel the passion that you've had for the space. And, you know, I know it's difficult sometimes, and it's hard to want to talk about the price because you're so passionate about really what's underneath it all. You know, and maybe you can respond to this. Did it frustrate you seeing what happened in 2017 in the crypto space, where there's just so many people coming in that were, you know, bandwagon fans, if you would, people that, you know, ignored you in 2016, 2015, all of a sudden are texting you, hey, what's happening in this space? You know, what's going on now? Because obviously the price is going up and a lot of people are seemingly making a lot of money. Is Bitcoin going to stop at 20,000 or is it off to 100,000? I mean, these were real questions that people were asking, considering how fast it was moving up, right? So, I mean, maybe respond to that and, you know,
yeah,
I mean, close out.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, I'm much more excited about enterprise adoption of enterprise adoption of blockchains and blockchain technology in the DLT space overall. And, you know, I have no hard feelings against the excitement and maybe some false excitement. We need more mass adoption. And when you get mass adoption, you're going to get people who are just completely brand new to the space. I'd rather have people that are brand new that were able to achieve personal freedom, financial freedom, and decided to say, I'm going to quit my job that makes me miserable. I'm going to read the Bitcoin white paper. I'm going to invest in cryptocurrencies and spend more time with my family. That's fine. Not everybody needs to be a cryptocurrency and cybersecurity expert and come to every single cryptocurrency conference. It was annoying to be at a cryptocurrency conference where you would think you're in a room of just thought leaders, but you are with someone who just quit his job and made his first $100,000 liquid, and he's extremely pumped about the next pump and dump, or she. My excitement, again, it's much more at the bottom layer of what Bitcoin really means, what Satoshi Nakamoto's initial vision was. I think it's important to go back and read Satoshi's notes to try to understand what this was all about. We're entering a very unique time in the global financial system, with China about to release its own blockchain-backed yuan, and it's a direct attack against the US dollar. And at least from the American perspective, where I was born and raised, I hold an American passport, which has its own stipulations. And it's basically the next 5 to 10 years are so crucial for the blockchain ecosystem and its growth, and it's the battle that it'll put against the rise of the surveillance state from governments like China. And will we have an American consortium like Libra or Center, or will the IMF or the Fed release their own USD-backed blockchain coin? Like, the next 5 to 10 years are super crucial for humanity to have discussions like, is privacy a human right or not? And are we going to let governments scare us through the lens of safety and rip away our privacy?
Wow.
And yeah.
It's powerful. And, you know, it really, it's interesting because, you know, that's where a lot of the cryptocurrency conversation started, with people concerned about those things. But there's also a balance of, you know, if we are going to grow, it's going to have to get beyond that, you know, freedom from government. And, you know, because it's almost like a small group of people that think like that. Like you and I might think like that. We want our personal freedom. But the conventional wisdom, you know, they trust the government. They trust the, you know, what's going on around us, the mainstream media, all these different things, taxes, and, you know, just the way things,
I mean,
things
but
are in
I
this
think
world.
It's...
But we have to break out of that almost for a cryptocurrency to not be some fringe type of sector and go mainstream. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I find it concerning that people think the worst things when you defend cash. And really, it comes down to a simple scenario. When you pay for a beer in cash and I hand you a $5 bill for a beer on tap, you don't know what I bought before and you don't know what I'm going to buy after. And that's my human right. I gave you a tendered note that you believe has value. You don't have a right to know what I purchased before and what I'm going to purchase in the future. And that's my human right. And we, as humans globally, need this type of mechanism to exist so that a centralized government or any centralized entity cannot be monitoring each and every financial movement that you make. And that's our human right that we need to protect over the course of the next decade and multiple decades coming. And the birth of America really was that the founding fathers wanted a small government that had limited coercive powers. And the fact that the United States today is even turning into a larger coercive entity is ridiculous. It's fundamentally un-American. And I really wish more young Americans were to read into the creation of America. What were the founding fathers thinking? How much government did they want? Right. The beauty of America was anyone could come to America and own private property that they actually own, not real estate owned by a queen, a monarch, or a religion, and pay limited taxes voluntarily, feel safe. Nothing is more important than the priority of citizens than keeping a really small government, because taxation is theft. And as someone who believes in Bitcoin, I'm not an anarchist. I'm a free market capitalist. And Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general, I think, are one of the best driving factors to free market capitalism globally, so that we can promote individualism and so that we can promote personal prosperity and passion and the pursuit of personal freedom globally. And we need personal freedom and financial sovereignty. And I'm glad that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are here to provide us that.
Well, shout out to Omar Bam on this one, right? You got a little plug there. We love Omar on the show. One of our, I guess, one of our favorites when it comes.
Yeah, Omar's he's a stand-up gentleman, and he's been in the space from the beginning. And I remember meeting him actually at a crypto meetup in Los Angeles. And yeah, we've developed a cool friendship since then. I look forward to seeing him again. Shout out to Omar.
Shout out to Omar. All right, Harthaj, thank you so much for coming on Crush the Street. If people want to learn more about you, the work you do, the things you're
working
on.
Find me on Twitter.
Just go to Twitter, everyone. We'll have the links in the description area. Thank you, sir, for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.